They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A brewing humanitarian crisis in Eastern Europe threatens to escalate into a game of economic brinksmanship. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Belarus's main ally, Russia, has rejected UN Security Council accusations that the country is using migrants to destabilize the European Union's eastern border. This week, thousands of people hoping to cross into Poland from Belarus have endured freezing conditions as they wait in limbo at the border. Migrants told the BBC they were from Iraq and had flown via Syria or Turkey, each paying more than $3,000. To stop the flow of people, it's thought the EU could introduce sanctions on international airlines as early as Monday to prevent them landing in the Belarusian capital, Minsk. Today, though, Belarus's Bolivia Airlines and Turkish Airlines say they will no longer allow citizens of those countries to board flights from Turkey to Belarus. The BBC's Adam Easton has more on that story from the Polish capital, Warsaw.
An advisor to the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, tweeted overnight that the Turkish Civil Aviation Authority had agreed to stop selling tickets to citizens of Iraq, Syria, and Yemen flying from Turkey to Belarus. He said that this applies not only to Belavia, but to Turkish airlines and to all airports and is valid until further notice. So this is to try and stem the number of people in the Middle East getting onto flights and flying through Turkey towards Belarus.
Now, EU officials are also said to be mulling a fresh round of sanctions on Belarus, which could be unveiled as early as Monday. In return, though, Belarus has threatened to cut off gas supplies to Europe if that happens. How is that playing out at the moment?
The political crisis has escalated and has become an international crisis, with Russia and Belarus both denying involvement in orchestrating the massive increase in flow of illegal migration to European Union countries, Poland, Lithuania and Latvia, but who are then making threats saying, if you increase sanctions on the regime of Alexander Lukashenko, Mr. Lukashenko said, well, I'll turn off the gas to Europe. On the other side, you've got the European Union, the United States, who are adamant that Belarus is allowing enormous numbers of migrants, mainly from the Middle East, into their country, giving them visas, putting them in hotels, and then helping them get to the border and then pushing them across the border illegally, not at official border points, through the forests and cutting through razor wire fences. At the moment, on the border, you've got thousands of migrants. Hundreds of them are camped in tents with only campfires for heat. Winter is coming here in this area, in the forests on the border. Lots of deep snow. So this is a looming humanitarian disaster if no solution to this border crisis is found.
So what is it looking like at the moment? Does it seem the two sides diplomatically are engaging and trying to find a solution, or does it seem we'll see an escalation in tensions?
Diplomatic efforts are going on in the background all the time, but at the moment it doesn't seem to be close to a solution to reduce the number of people heading to the border and trying to cross it.
The BBC's Adam Easton for us in Warsaw. Thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
Thank you.
Well, checking the numbers now, global benchmarks are little changed, but holding near record levels this morning. Shares of AstraZeneca, though, are down 4.5%, weighing on London's FTSE 100. Third quarter profits from the company came in below analysts' expectations today, but the drug maker said it expects profit from its coronavirus vaccine to make up for the cost of its drug designed to prevent and treat the virus. Previously, AstraZeneca said it would not profit from its COVID-19 vaccine during the pandemic, but its chief executive said today the coronavirus is moving to the endemic stage, meaning the world will need to learn to live with it. And he said the company is still committed to selling its vaccine at no profit to low-income nations. Elsewhere, Japanese industrial conglomerate Toshiba is following in General Electric's footsteps today. It'll split itself into three publicly listed companies focused on infrastructure, devices, and memory chips. The announcement was made after the close of trade in Tokyo, but Toshiba's Frankfurt-listed shares are down 0.7% on the news. The BBC's Mariko Oi has more on that story.
Splitting up a historic company is a common business strategy elsewhere, but it's far from common in Japan, and Toshiba's announcement to split into three marks the end of an era. For decades, it was a face of Japan's high-tech industry, but in 2015, it admitted that it had overstayed its profits for 6 years, making it a symbol of the many scandals blighting Japan Inc. Ever since then, the company has been under enormous pressure from activist investors, and today's announcement highlights their growing impact. But analysts warn the speed of restructuring is too slow, and it remains to be seen if this is enough to please those investors.
That's the BBC's Mariko Oi there. It's the final day of the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow, and the latest draft agreement has softened language requiring governments to phase out coal and other fossil fuels. However, several key clauses have been strengthened, including one expressing deep regret that rich nations failed to deliver the $100 billion a year promised to poor nations for climate mitigation. And that's a problem for parts of Africa, where the World Bank says the frequency of droughts tripled over the last decade. But the South African city of Cape Town, which nearly ran out of water altogether 3 years ago, is finding unusual ways to cope, as the BBC's Andrew Harding reports.
Overseeing the teams here today is Nkosi Natinama, steering a huge project to clear the mountains of non-indigenous trees, of pines in particular.
About 54 billion litres of water a year are used up by invasive alien plant species in these seven priority subcatchments.
So water that could have gone to people in Cape Town?
That's about 2 to 3 months worth of water a year.
Just 3 years ago, a severe drought emptied the reservoirs and pushed Cape Town to the very brink of running out of water completely, towards what became known as Day Zero. Activist Siyabonga Myeza remembers how people rallied, cutting the city's water consumption by half.
That shock was enough to facilitate the process of change and responsibility.
But the challenges in South Africa remain huge. To the northeast of Cape Town, retired farmer Jay Killian flies me over a huge region that has not seen a proper rainfall for almost 7 years.
We've had droughts before, but never this bad. And if this continues, then obviously we'll end up as a desert.
But it's not just the bone-dry pasture here that's suffering. In towns and cities across the Eastern Cape, the taps are running dry.
I'm following a water truck as it makes its way around this very poor township. You can hear the noise of the pump there. And desperate people all around me are running, literally running, towards the truck every time it stops. There's no guarantee when the truck will be back next. It is tempting, of course, to blame all this on the drought, on climate change. Truth is that this is about a failure to plan, build and to maintain key infrastructure here.
We are the earth, it is our planet.
Optimism from a group of young climate activists here. But the race is on to manage a continent's scarce water resources more efficiently and much more fairly.
That's the BBC's Andrew Harding reporting from Cape Town there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.